Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Today we pay tribute to our great friend Andrew Patterson. I'm joined by Scott and Motherwell Chief Executive Alan Burrows. It's possibly the most difficult intro I've ever had to do for this. It's without doubt the most difficult intro I've ever had to do to the podcast. We've lost someone so special to us, someone that brought a bit of reason, a bit of ration to the madness of this podcast, a great friend, a great husband, a great Motherwell supporter. Guys, welcome along. It's obviously been a very difficult 24 hours for us all, but today we're here just to have a wee blether and chew the fat over what Andy would want us to do, to talk about Motherwell, to talk about his big passion in life.
Well, thanks for having us, Andy, again, and thanks for Alan for coming on. It's just when you phoned me yesterday to break the news, I couldn't believe it. You just take every day for granted, and it just shows you that you need to enjoy life while you can, without sounding too morbid. But I'd just like to pass my condolences on to his friends and family. For me, I've really got to know Andy really well over the last 18 months doing this with yourself, and it's been one of the very few consistent things that I've had in my life, much like anybody else. And you actually, I probably spoke to yourself and Andy as much as I spoke to anybody, and it is such a shock and a big loss to me as a friend. But I just can't imagine how his family are dealing with the tragedy, and I just wish them all the best.
Yeah, same for me, Andy. Always enjoy coming on the podcast. Never thought for a minute that the next time you asked me to come on would be in relation to losing a guy like Andy Patterson, who's, you know, I'm probably a bit like many people listening to this. I've known Andy for over 20 years, through various different Motherwell kind of guises, if you like, you know, the Excels Club. Fir Park Corner, the Well Worth Saving Campaign, the Motherwell Supporters Trust, One Step Beyond, Great Leap Forward, you know, everything that I've been with him, and then just even WTFC, Days Out, Andy, and whatever. So yeah, it's just like you guys, I found out yesterday morning, I got a phone call from another Motherwell fan, Dan Wood, who had phoned me, and he actually messaged me first and said, have you heard about Andy Patterson? And I phoned him straight away, and I have to be honest with you, when I phoned him, I didn't even enter my head that might have been the news. I don't know what I was thinking, but really, really shocked. And like both of you, I would like to add my, you know, deepest and you know sincerest condolences, not only on behalf of myself, but obviously on behalf of the Motherwell Football Club, for the loss of, I think, you know, we've used all the adjectives already, and we're only just starting the show, but you know, I'd just like to say, from my experiences of Andy, just a really, really nice bloke. You know, a proper, polite guy who, you know, I read another Motherwell fan, Keith Foster, say on Twitter yesterday that in football circles, it's hard to find somebody that nobody's got a bad word to say about. Everybody likes to have their own wee bitches about here, there, and everywhere, but and everything. But, you know, Andy was one of the guys, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say a bad word about him, just because of the type of guy that he was. So, yeah, that's the guy I'll remember. Still numb and come to terms with it, but you know, really just a really top bloke, as much as a huge Motherwell fan. And like you guys, and like probably all the people who knew him at Fir Park, everybody will miss him, but I think that will pale into significance when it comes to his wife and his sister and the rest of his family, who'll be, you know, hurting beyond belief at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a very surreal kind of last 24 hours, but there was the podcast chat where I was kind of trawling through messages last night, and there was a episode, which this happens all the time, to be perfectly honest, where we record and something messes up, and Andy's reply to it was, so we had committed about an hour and 10 minutes of conversation that just had been lost, and Andy's reply was, to be honest, I just love talking about the football. I just love socialising and just kind of having a blether. And I was speaking to Grant Russell yesterday, and he was saying that when Andy did the season ticket campaign flow, that they asked him a question, and his reply was, I just love it. he just loved the football club so much, and he said that was a kind of running joke in the media team almost. Like, if anything was a really good piece of work, they would play Andy's wee clip of "I just love it." And that was the man, wasn't it? In terms of he just had such enthusiasm, but he was so grounded and so rational. When football's a very reactive game and everything else, but he was always able to be there with the kind of measured opinion and just rational voice.
Yeah, I wasn't, you know, taking away my personal friendship with him and how much I've known him for you know, a couple of decades. If you examine it just from a football club point of view, Andy's probably the type of the kind of prototype fan you want from everybody, and that very loyal, very loving of the club. You know, will always try and be supportive and helpful, and even when things are not going particularly well, will always kind of retain a calm and, you know, rational head, as you've said. And listen, if every football fan was like that, running a football club would be really easy and, you know, really simple. But, you know, maybe, you know, I think, as you've said, how emotive and how passionate everybody is about football, it stirs different emotions in different people. But Andy was always, I think, you know, I let you, I told loads of messages both on social media and, you know, a rare foray back onto message boards for me, and read through what people were saying. And it's funny, the way people have described him on, for example, Steelman Online last night was exactly the type of Andy that I remember. Just somebody who, you know, can offer a very balanced and straight-up opinion, despite the fact when everybody else is losing their head, he seemed to keep his. And I think that's what gained him a lot of respect in that world, if you like. I know it's quite an interesting world at times, but that kind of online Mullow supporters group that he's almost been involved in from the very infancy, if you like. You know, I remember him going right the way back to the very internet days of MullowFC.org and then on the Rivals Network and things, and Andy was always a big, you know, and solid contributor to those things, and even through the Excels club that he was running parallel to that at that time. I think he's just one of these guys, I think, wanted to immerse himself in everything that Mullow Football Club did, said or operated. And, you know, I think that's I think you're right. We'd done the season ticket video with him, watched Sean through it more than anything. And it was one of the reasons why we suggested him for it. It was just his passion for the club. And I seen his sister say that on social media last night, that she'd be so proud of all the Mullow fans saying the messages that they have, given it was so important to him as well. So, you know, those are hopefully very comforting messages for his family at what will be, you know, as I said earlier on, a very excruciatingly difficult time for them.
And Pepe, we've had 24 hours to try and rationalise the news and everything else, but I think a lot of us have taken comfort from reading these messages about Andy, because with the best will in the world and a supporter base like Motherwell, where it's quite close in that, and it can be quite cliquey and quite—I don't know. It's impossible to get on with everyone, put it that way. But it's glowing references to Andy, and it's the Andy that the you and I knew. It's the Andy that Flo knows as well. It was just that—it was a gentleman, just such a amazing character that it's just so difficult to comprehend right now.
I don't think there's any words or anything that I can say that's going to explain exactly what's went through my mind over the last 24 hours. The thing that keeps on coming back into my mind is obviously this year being the 30-year anniversary of the Scottish Cup, and Andy and I spent about an hour and a half on another podcast talking about our memories of the Cup final. And during that, I'd said a wee bit about my memories about Phil O'Donnell, and after it, Andy actually phoned me and said that, oh, that was a, you really done him proud, Phil O'Donnell there, and it was a great way you described him and stuff. And when you'd said about the coming on doing the podcast today, I was thinking, God, it doesn't feel like that long ago that I had that conversation with Andy about speaking about Phil O'Donnell. Never in a lifetime did I think that I would be coming on to speak about one kind of co-host or whatever you want to call us, what we on the podcast, but more importantly, a friend. As you say, the every single comment that you read is so consistent about him, about his manner, everything that Flo said. And I suppose in a roundabout way, I think this is what makes the club, so supporting a club like Motherwell so special, that the amount of people that had said, I haven't even met Andy face to face, but I still feel as if I know him. I think that speaks testament to somebody's online profile on the day, because he conducted himself online the way that he did in person. Yep. And that's a really difficult thing to do, and I'm sure Flo will know more than anybody about online stuff, with some of the stuff he needs to put up with, but it just shows you that Andy had just the manner, it was just natural to him, and he's a huge loss to us as doing the podcast, to Motherwell fans and beyond. Just tragic.
One of the things I was going to say, just to add to that, was that, you know, and this is to put a bit of hopefully a smile on people's faces when they think about Andy. One of the things that I always found about him, because he used to, as you know, he used to write for the fanzines, and I always love his bit stuff in the fanzines, even the stuff online. I always thought, as much as he was sensible and polite and mannerful, I also thought he was really funny. I used to really enjoy his writing. I think he always had a good tinge of humour. I think I used to enjoy his sense of humour, quite dry, quite sarcastic at times, which I really, really, I found was really funny. So yeah, I think that's another side to him. I think that's another side to him that I think is, you know, that is almost kind of, not I wouldn't say forgotten about in the last 24 hours, but, you know, I just enjoyed him as a guy. I found him engaging to be around at times as well. And that sprung from not only his, you know, sense of decency, but also his sense of humour as well, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a great point in terms of, as much as he was such a rational guy and everything else, he always had a kind of a rational dislike for things as well, especially St Mirren, it must be said. I think there's a kind of forum wars type thing with Brian Borrell, where the day that St Mirren didn't manage to finish in the top six this season, honestly, was like all his birthdays come at once. So delighted. And it was really just all due to the couple of games that we had to replay last season. But he held a grudge. He properly held a grudge, but he did it. He didn't do it in the way that some people would do it. He just did it in such a friendly, kind of humoured way. But straight away, the message came in as soon as, I think it was St Johnstone they were playing the final day, scored a late goal. It was over the moon, and it was kind of these wee things as well that just, I think, have kind of helped pass the last day, because that was the character. He took such pride in everything he did. He was always on a call about half an hour before you wanted him to be there, and everything else. He loved his football. He took such pride in himself and his friends. It's just, I'm blabbering. I absolutely know I'm blabbering. But
do you know what I think was good about him as well, Andy, just to jump in for a wee bit as well? I don't know if you ever noticed this about Andy, but he always used to spend loads of times on other clubs' message boards. And I think that just goes to talk about, you know, he was so obsessed by Motherwell and football, but I think he just loved football in general as well, you know. I remember popping on, I think I was popping on an Albion Rovers message board one time. I can't remember why I was there. It was a couple of years ago. And I remember seeing he had been, you know, conversing with Rovers fans on there. I don't know if we were signing a player or a Motherwell player had went to Albion Rovers or something. I can't remember the exact reason. And he was just on there chatting away to people just in the exact same way that we knew. And I remember thinking at the time, God, Andy's just immersed in so much football when it comes to Motherwell and just Lanarkshire football in general. And I also think that, I think that's what endeared them to people as well, that, you know, as much as you have those irrational hatreds that we all have in football, which always make me laugh, he always used to have it. I remember that One Step Beyond, he used to have an irrational hatred of Jim Grady as well, which always used to make me laugh. But I just think, you know, from a serious point of view, I think he always just liked talking football, and I think that's probably why he suited you guys here on the podcast so much, because I think he felt so comfortable in that environment, you know.
He was always the winner. I can remember one recently where he was falling behind a wee bit, and I was in front of him, but then he had his, I think we get into the 80s and 90s, and he came into his own as usual. But just another thing about him, although I totally agree with everything that we've all said, that one thing that I picked up with him was that, although, like everybody else, we've all got a passion about Motherwell and an obsession, if you like, that Andy would always structure it around about his family. I always remember him saying, I think you had said to us one day, Andy, you just want to come on after, I think it might have been one of the midweek split games, and he said, no, because my wife is a sleepover the next day, and I wouldn't want to upset her by watching the game and then going on talking about it for an hour and a half. So his priorities were firmly, obviously, his family, which is completely honourable. Maybe I should have took a leaf at his book, where I would have quite gladly put my three kids in the room and told my wife to shut up so I could talk about it for another hour. So it just shows that Andy's, it would always be, you could tell he was a passionate guy. I mean, he was even talking about, he couldn't do one of the podcasts because he was out delivering flyers for the recent elections and stuff like that. And even at that point, maybe our politics didn't agree, he would never ever disagree with you. And I can't continue to, the more things that you sit and you talk about them, the more good things come in, and that's testament to Andy.
We'll try for the last 10 minutes of this just to kind of have a wee blather about the football. I think that's what Andy would want, that's what his passion was, and that's where he came to be such a close friend of myself and everyone that I'm sure is listening. The fact that he had such a great passion for the football club. Alan, we're a couple of weeks into the post-season. It seems to be a all hands and pump situation at the moment. A lot of players have departed the football club. We've had one new arrival so far. A very busy time, I suspect.
Yeah, very much so. I think this is going to be a bit of a different close season for Motherwell fans, who've been used to effectively, I think, 4 or 5 years of Stephen Robinson, who was very, very, very quick off the mark when it came to recruitment. He was very adamant that he wanted things done very early, and felt that was the best way to handle it, and that's fine. I think Graham Alexander likes to look at it slightly different. I think he wants to take his time a bit more. I think he wants to do a bit more analysing on specific targets. I think he wants to make sure that, in his eyes, you know, he gets the right ones. So I think it's probably, you know, for Motherwell fans, probably sitting here in the middle of June, normally we've signed about 7 players by now. This year, obviously one. But what I would say to you is that I think, as you'd all imagine, there's a huge amount of work going on behind the scenes every day. Graham's back in at the club now. We're trying to get a couple over the... We'll certainly look to hopefully have a couple over the line by we return for pre-season, you know, on the 21st of June. But yeah, listen, between arranging friendlies and, you know, having our third attempt at trying to get a pre-season camp because of COVID cancelling the previous two, you know, and friendly matches and new players and new kits. And yeah, it's just it's a really, really busy time for everybody at the football club. But, you know, I think Motherwell fans who will obviously be keen for us to sign and strengthen the squad and maybe slightly anxious about the fact that we've not quite... you know, I did maybe as many as people might have thought so far. What I would just reassure them to say is, listen, there's a lot of work going on there, and the targets we're identifying, we're still working through at the minute. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, particularly the English market, been a little bit slow just now because we're a couple of weeks ahead of them. You know, if you look at a lot of Scottish transfers so far, a lot of them are Scotland to Scotland transfers. There aren't too many international transfers. I think our busy spell is just coming up in terms of players on the way.
How different has that been? You seem to have a very strong relationship with Graham Alexander, as you had with Stephen Robinson. They're both different operators, though, as well. How have you dealt with that kind of change in pace, almost? Because it seems to be a bit more meticulous, and whereas quite often we're quoted as saying that we had players in around about March, April time for the following season, Graham Alexander's a wee bit more cautious, and he's assessing the market a bit more.
Yeah, I think there is that. Listen, every manager's just different styles. I don't ever think there's one right or wrong way. I think everybody just has their own way. Stephen was very much of the view, Stephen Robinson, this is, that Motherwell as a club couldn't afford to wait too long, because if we wait too long on our targets, who might be our number one target, that same player might be a target two or a target three for a bigger club, if you like, and the longer we wait, and if those clubs miss out on their target one and two, then we're going to get blown out of the water. And listen, I have a sympathy and I understand and I totally get where Stephen's coming from that point of view. You know, and in many ways I agree with a lot of it. Graham's is slightly different, and I think his view would be that, you know, rather than, you know, take the first pick that we're going to get, let's make sure that the pick that we're going to bring in his eyes is the strongest pick, and that might mean waiting a wee bit longer, or, you know, battling harder to get one, or you know, trying to aim for whatever he might want to aim for. So yeah, from my own point of view, I was very close to Stephen. I'm close to Graham as well, and listen, that's natural. It builds up. You work with the same people day in and day out, and if you're not working with beside them, you're on the phone to them every day, so naturally you're going to get close. But listen, it's just different styles, different approaches, and I suppose only really in football, like everything else, only time will tell about how successful or otherwise it'll be. Obviously, clearly we're hoping it's going to be successful, and I have to say, just if I can put my Motherwell fan hat back on for a minute, as we spent the first 10-15 minutes of the show talking about Andy, he's been a fan. I'm really excited by the targets that we're trying to get. Hopefully we can get them over the line. It's not easy. It's not a simple process. You know, attracting players, particularly from England, to come up to Scotland is always a challenge. I think you'll hear people say that. That challenge is exacerbated slightly because of COVID and the restrictions that have been in place, or people's worry about restrictions and how they might come back again. You know, and the difficulty to integrate new players from the squad from down south. So I think you know, a combination of all that stuff plus them being a wee bit behind has meant we've been a bit slower than perhaps we have been in the last 4 or 5 years to actually get guys over the line. And you rightly said, whereas by now Stephen would have had probably about 4 or 5 players done on a pre-contract. But again, that's just differences of approach, and ultimately time will tell if the one we're on at the minute is successful, and clearly everybody who loves Mullow is hoping it is.
We've had the second successive close season where the fans haven't had the opportunity to say goodbye to many players that served the club with great distinction. This summer has been no different. Notable guys like Alan Campbell and Charles Dunn departing the football club. It's a difficult one from a fan perspective to not have the opportunity to say your goodbyes to these players, because they were magnificent Motherwell jerseys. And I think the thing notable about Alan Campbell and Charles Dunn in particular is they seem to be great eggs around the football club as well, really kind of integral to the dressing room and just the overall ethos of the football club.
No, absolutely. And listen, we didn't want to lose Alan by any stretch of the imagination. But I think, I mean, we started off an Alan Campbell contract about 20-odd months ago, nearly just short of 2 years ago, you know, cognizant of the fact that his contract was running down and we wanted to try and protect it, and certainly wanted to try and avoid a situation similar to Chris Cadden. So we've been trying to get him for a large period of time, you know, and put to him what were extremely good offers. In fact, the last one we put to him would have been, you know, but in Motherwell terms, you know, certainly in the last 20 years or so, or the last 15, 20 years, certainly, you know, up there with one of the best that the club had made. You know, such was the importance we placed in him, and such is the job that, as you say, not just on the Saturday from 3:45, but, you know, all throughout the week, the example he sets, particularly to the younger players who would always look up to him. So, yeah, but listen, Alan and I and the manager had a very honest conversation about 6, maybe 10 weeks ago, the kind of last time we really tried to get him to stay. And he, you know, he spoke very well to us and very openly and honestly about where he's seen his career now. And it wasn't for him about money, and it wasn't about the club and everything he'd done, which I think he was so appreciative of. I just think for his own point of view, he felt for his career and for his own motivation and hunger and desire that he had to do something new and take a new challenge. So for him, he said to me, listen, you can offer me all the money, it's not about money, this is not a move, this is not a career choice about money, this is about just my own personal mindset and kicking on and developing. So, you know, I totally respect that, and it's just very appropriate when you think of Alan Campbell and the type of guy he is. I think you've read guys like Keith Lasley and Stephen Hamill and countless others involved in their dressing room for over the last, you know, 5 to 6 or 7 years who've waxed lyrical about Alan in terms of the type of individual he is. And I can only really add to that from the chief exec whilst I'm not with him in the gym or the training ground, clearly. But it's just his general conduct and how he conducts himself and how the professionalism that he holds himself in. You know, he's been a credit to himself and his family, and we'll miss him very much so. But, you know, I think he's on the verge of a very good move to the English Championship. You know, we've been and had, you know, numerous discussions with numerous clubs down there, and he's clearly in quite significant demand. The club will get a fairly healthy development fee and will negotiate, no doubt, you know, the potential for future sell-ons as we have with others. So, you know, as much as we're disappointed we're losing Alan and maybe disappointed that we couldn't maybe commercialise him to the point from that we would like to, you know, on a sale, I think we'll still get some decent money for him and we'll have the opportunity to do it. But also just wish him well and thank him for everything he's done. On Charles, listen, Charles has been is a terrific guy, one of the best that I've ever came across in football. So honest, so great for the club. Just, I think, bought into the whole community ethos of the club, and you're aligning players up with clubs, then Charles and Mullow go together, I think, like hand in glove. But he's had a really difficult time through injuries for the last couple of years. I think Graham Alexander, who's not really had a huge amount of time to see him, wanted to get a further look at him in pre-season and offered him that opportunity. Just to really come in and, you know, not a trial, but certainly to showcase his fitness, you know, training at the level of intensity that Graham intends to train through pre-season to see how it would go for him. And I think he was open to that, but I think when he got an offer like he got from St Mirren, which was a very good offer, particularly for the 2 years, you know, I think he felt that he had to go and take that. And listen, I totally, totally respect that and totally understand why he's done that. In fact, when he phoned me about it, I said to him, listen, Charles, you can't not take that. That's just a great offer. So, you know, we wish him all the best. Thank him for the time that he had at the club, particularly that first season when he was so important to the club getting to 2 finals. And wish him all the best for his career. And hopefully that he's over the worst of his injuries, because if ever a guy deserved a run of games and a run of fitness and a run of, you know, a consecutive run in the first team, then it's Charles Dunn for all the hard work he's done to get back from what have been 2 or 3 really serious injuries.
I totally agree with everything that you said there, Alan, with regards to Charles Dunn and particularly Alan Campbell. The reaction to both players moving on is testament to these two guys as well. Charles Dunn, for me, off the park, even through his injury, I've bumped into him a few times. He's always great with my wee boy Ben. A great character to have at the club. But let's be honest, that sometimes fans look at football only as supporters. We've got to understand that these guys have families and lives to support. Charlie, as you said, it was an incredible offer. I don't think many fans hold him ill at all. And with Alan Campbell, it goes without saying. What he's done for the club, I would love to have seen him playing getting his full international cap with Scotland, but it wasn't to be. I've just got a wee quick question about the new head of recruitment, Alan, Nick Dawes. Was that kind of, obviously I know he's worked with Graham before, so I think it was at Graham's, and was he involved in the January transfer window, or is that just been an appointment as of now?
No, Nick wasn't involved in the January window. Martin Foyle had done that. It was a really difficult one in January because the manager had come in. You know, he was still trying to assess the squad. We're in a bit of a crisis moment. Bear in mind, we came in and we were bottom of the table. There's so many players out injured. It was just a kind of a bit of a perfect storm, really. So the January window, I think a lot of it, not all of it, but a lot of it was certainly Martin Foyle had certainly directed traffic there. But I think the difficulty that I think we had with Martin was that, you know, in COVID times, it's so hard for our members of staff to really get to know other members of staff because you can't socialise. The contact you've got is very limited. So really the only opportunity you've really got to get to really properly know people is just at work and at the ground. And obviously Martin being based in England, it's just been very, very difficult for that relationship to really kind of grow in a sense, whereas Stephen Robinson and Martin had spent so much time together, and Martin had done such a phenomenal job for the club over the last 4 or 5 years. But I think he'd also felt that when Stephen left, you know, because they had got so close, that he probably felt even before the new manager came in that, you know, maybe his time at Motherwell was starting to come to an end, and he'd started to make kind of noises to me kind of round about that very, very early on. You know, so when he had the opportunity to go and work for Northampton, which is much closer to home for him, and obviously clearly will allow him to be at the roundabout that club on a much more day-to-day basis, if you like, obviously subject not to being at games, then it was a good opportunity for him, and we were obviously very happy to allow him to do that. I think Nick coming in is going to probably operate in a slightly different manner to Martin, in a sense where it's as much as going to be about a head scout stroke recruitment role as it is about coordinating the different types of approaches we're going to look to do when it comes to recruitment. And that's, you know, a significantly re-emphasised focus on analysis and data and statistics, which Nick is you know, very into, is very experienced in. And along with, you know, what you may have seen on his personal profile, Graham MacArthur's return back to the club to boost the analysis department alongside Ross Clarkson. So those are types of things where, you know, that will never replace the old-fashioned scouting boots on the ground. That's obviously that's your bread and butter of scouting. But particularly in the kind of COVID world and probably the post-COVID world, hopefully it was going to come around soon, I think the nature of scouting is now changing. I think the nature of player identification and player ID is diversifying away from that old kind of Tuesday night in a reserve stadium in England somewhere into a much more analytical, stats-based sort of approach. So whilst we're not going to jump into it on full-on Brentford, if you like, I think we're going to, you know, try and have much more of a hybrid than we've had probably previously, and look at different ways to try and have a, you know, player or different look at different ways on player recruitment. So, you know, Nick is going to bring a lot of experience in that side of it, and, you know, as you say, there is a relationship previously with Graham, so there's less of a requirement in terms of him to be about the club, because Graham and him already know each other intrinsically well in terms of the types of players that he wants, and obviously Nick's very familiar on how Graham likes to play, so you don't have that element to it as well. So, you know, there's lots of advantages there, and Nick had obviously worked at AFC Wimbledon, so he's had some direct experience in the role as well. So, you know, we're very pleased with the appointment. Nick's a very good guy. He's been with us now for about 6 or 7 weeks, helping us out doing different things. Just weren't probably able to announce him because he actually, for a variety of COVID reasons, couldn't get up. But now that he has been up at the club, we could get his picture taken and get him announced formally and properly. But yeah, he's been working hard in a way over the last couple of weeks, just trying in preparation for what Andy said, which is going to be no doubt a very, very busy 3 or 4 weeks between now and the start of August.
You mentioned the fact that it was obviously a difficult season for numerous factors last season. Graham Alexander came in and guided the team to almost a top six finish in the end. The season's obviously come to a close, and we're now heading into a major championship that Scotland have finally ended their wait to be part of, with two Motherwell players part of the squad. That must be a low endorsement for the staff at the football club, as well as, of course, Declan Gallagher and Stephen O'Donnell that have performed so well over the last, in Stephen O'Donnell's case, last season, and for two seasons for Declan Gallagher.
Yeah, I mean, for Motherwell Football Club to have two representatives, not only in the national team, but the national team in a major tournament, is phenomenal. I think I'm right in saying this, that they're the first two players to ever represent Scotland whilst at Motherwell at a major tournament ever. So, I mean, these things don't come around often, let alone two in one squad. So I think that's something to celebrate. Obviously, Declan's leaving for Aberdeen, so for a lot of Motherwell fans, and I get this, and Declan will get this as well, that takes some of that shine off it. But by every reckoning, he's still a Motherwell player as we speak right now. So anything he achieves during this tournament, he does so as a Motherwell player. I think, you know, you're right, Declan, particularly in his first season, I think was outstanding and very much merited his calling to the Scotland squad. And since he's been into that Scotland squad, I think most Scotland fans will look at it and say that he's done very well in those games. I think Stephen O'Donnell, by his own admission, came in and probably didn't quite start the week as well as he'd want to. But I think, I don't know if you guys agree, but I think grew into the season and certainly grew into, you know, the new manager's way of playing. I think he suits Graham a bit more than the kind of style that Stephen had towards the end. And I think Stephen O'Donnell would tell you that himself. So, you know, I think Stephen finished the season really well with us, actually, under Graham, you know, after a, you know, a, a slow start. And listen, that's understandable because the whole team started slow and last year was a real disappointment for us generally, even though, as you mentioned, the run that we were on from, you know, effectively January to the end of the season, by and large, was excellent. It wasn't always pretty on the eye, and I think Graham had said that, Graham Alexander said that publicly on numerous occasions, that, you know, the situation that he found himself in, and then which rapidly got worse. If we think of the injury situation where we had a double header against Hamilton and St Johnstone at Fir Park, and I think in the second game, I think we had 17 players missing, which is just ridiculous. For a whole variety of different reasons, by the way, so there wasn't one single issue. I think he felt at that point that he almost had to press the pause button and just make sure that we get out of this by hook or by crook. And I think that's the job that he was entailed. I think he would offer any Mullow fan at that point just to get free of it. But then end up, I think, with the third best form between January and May for Graham is a huge testament to trying to lift that squad in a very difficult situation. But going back to the two players at Euros, yeah, the first Mullow player to be at a major tournament since Tommy Coyne in USA 94. And I'm sure the three of us are in an era where Tommy Coyne was a legend and a hero. So perhaps it's a time for Declan or Stephen to go and do that themselves at this tournament. And I've just not long watched the England-Croatia game. And I have to say, in true Scottish fashion, I'm going to get really ahead of myself and say I don't think there's anything for us to fear in those two matches if we can go and play the way we can play with the players that we've got and Steve Clark's squad, which, you know, I'm actually for the first time from a Scottish team in a while really, really excited with the prospect of seeing a lot of these talented young boys play.
We've talked a lot about matters on the park. Off the park, the season ticket initiative for next season is something that has got attention for the world of football. It's an incredible gesture by the football club. I think as supporters, we kind of expected to be guided towards just forgoing the fact that we hadn't been in grounds this season. But Mullow did completely the opposite. And in fact, they ensured that fans would get their season tickets next year. It wasn't a kind of, if you decide to do so, it was that's what's happening. There's always the initiatives to supporters that are in low incomes or unemployed. There's funds for that, and for the community trust there's donation schemes, but the gesture to honour the season tickets is a massive, massive thing, and it's received plaudits from across the world of football. It's such a massive gesture in a time where very few other football clubs have come anywhere near close to replicating that.
Yeah, listen, I'm glad it went down as well as it did. I remember joking to Grant Russell, our head of PR, when we were announcing the season tickets, which was effectively free season tickets, refund, then a donation for low-income families to get free season tickets. I remember joking to him saying, if we can't PR this, we might as well chuck it. But seriously, I think genuinely when the board discussed it at length, I think it was very important for us that we maintained the word that we gave. We would only have done it as directors of the company if it wasn't going to endanger the club, and that's the first and foremost. We're not doing anything here, or we're not coming up with any initiative because we've backed ourselves into a corner, or because we've made promises that we can't keep. We genuinely believe that as a club, you know, we've got to do the right thing. And the do the right thing is, we asked people last year, if you remember, in April and May and June last year, to part with hundreds of pounds of their own money when they probably themselves, A, first of all, didn't know what they were going to get to see, and B, you know, probably a lot of them under threat from their own working, but on furlough and having no guarantees themselves about what their own personal situation is going to be. So that's a big ask for people. And I think as football clubs, you've got to be careful that you don't take people's loyalty for granted. So it was very important for the football club and the directors and the Welsh Society board, who were very much on board with this, to really, you know, say, what type of club do we want to be here? You know, what type of club, and how should we behave and how should we act? And I think that's the question we constantly ask ourselves when we're taking all decisions, maybe all of which we won't get right all the time. But I think any decision we do make as a club, I think we'll try and take it for the right reasons. As I said, some will work and some won't. But I think I've been hugely encouraged by the fact that, you know, the donation scheme, we're almost into six figures now in terms of the amount of season tickets we're going to be able to give away, which is phenomenal. If you think of that amount of money that can be helped distribute to help people in low income families or people who are unemployed to go and see their club next year, you know, obviously restrictions provide, dependent. From a refunds point of view, would you believe that we had a dozen you got a dozen. I mean, that is nothing. I mean, you're talking about 0.03% or something, which again just talks to Mullow supporters. And listen, we ask people, listen, don't be shy about asking. If you need it, take it. But to have so few again demonstrates just how fantastic a support we've got and their willingness to support the club. But I think just generally, I think it talks, we took the decision because A, the club has managed its finances well. We're into COVID in a good shape in terms of selling James Scott to Hull and selling David Turnbull at Celtic, finishing third and having a run in Europe. But also, you know, we've had some success in the insurance payouts. So I think all those things combined, we felt that we really should do it and we really ought to do it. And I'm delighted that it's been received well. But also, more importantly, from an opportunities point of view, I think with, you know, to maintain the season ticket levels that we have, we're now already over 4,000 in terms of topping that number back up. By the time we do the giveaways, we'll probably be closer to 5,000, maybe more, which will be the most season tickets the club have ever had at any point in their history. And I think that opportunity there is, how do we make sure that we look after those 5,000, and how do we continue to grow those 5,000, and how do we keep them engaged? Because I think one of the risks in COVID and people being away from the game so often and people getting out of the habit of going to Fir Park is that you can lose not only fans of now, but potentially even generations of fans if they get out of that habit of doing it. So from our point of view, it was about maintaining that, because the longer term health of the club is more important. And I've quoted and saying this, I think, on Twitter at the time, and I'll finish with it. The way the club look at this, Andy, is that if you look at the way the club's viewed this, is if you look after our fans and you look after our people when they need you to look after them, then when the club needs them to look after us, people will do it. And I think that's the kind of mindset and the mentality that we're trying to build here, that there's a mutual respect and a mutual understanding between the supporters and the base in the club. And I think we've managed to build that up, you know, really well, hopefully over the last couple of years, even despite disappointments on the pitch at times. But I think generally, hopefully, most of the supporters know that the people who run the club care for them, care for the area, take their responsibilities in the area seriously. And we believe that, you know, when you act like this, when people need it, as I said, when we really need it and we need the help and the support, people will be there for us. So hopefully that will ring true in the future if and when that comes.
Just the final one, the club has been a shining light during this, and the way they've conducted themselves. It's been a really difficult 18 months, of course it has been. How difficult has it been to continue to operate and find that momentum and focus and drive without the supporters there? Because it's often said as a cliche that the supporters are the lifeblood of a football club, but as you've rightfully mentioned, we've been distant from the last 18 months. It's been difficult watching in streams, and especially when results aren't going the way that we hope they're going to go, or performances aren't. It's so reactive now, because you're still sitting on the couch after the game's finished, so people are straight on the case of whether it be the manager or the right back or the goalkeeper or anything else. Everything's a disaster straight away. Has that been a challenge in terms of just kind of keeping your head above water and just kind of trying to maintain that degree of ration when things are so immediate?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think if you think of the actual, there's two things, right? And I can speak from personal experience, because I've been one of the very, very few fortunate people who have still managed to go to games in my role as chief exec. But I think when you're at the game, there's genuinely a different feeling from when you're watching it on the screen. I think when you're watching the screen, it's much more objective, in a sense where you are just assessing it for what it is, whereas when you're at the match with your friends or in that atmosphere, things that happen in the match get you caught up in it, and quite often you don't see it as objective. It's much more emotional. So I think that comes into play. I think the immediacy of reaction right after the match, for example, as you've said, people immediately pick up their phone, they're on their laptop at the same time watching it. You know, and people don't have that cooling off period, if you want to call it that, and that might be, you know, going to the pub, or that might be walking back with their mates, or that may be going for their takeaway or whatever. Anything that, you know, gives you that bit of time to just kind of cool down and rationalise to a certain extent. But listen, you've got to allow people for that. And listen, sorry, the third thing I should say is, obviously, people are obviously frustrated, caged in, if you want to use that expression, in their own lives personally. And one of the few things that people have in terms of normality or close to normality is the fact that the football is still going. So, you know, if that, you've got to allow people to a certain extent that outpouring, that kind of release in a sense. And I think we've seen that not just at Mullow. I think a lot of clubs have felt that, you know, particularly some big clubs in this part of the world, who felt that kind of additional pressure because people are also feeling that pressure in their own lives. But listen, we've got to understand that it's an emotional sport, as an emotive subject, something we all passionately care about. And we spent the first part of the show talking about Andy and how much he cared about the club and how much he loved the club and managed to keep his head. But as we said then, you know, so many people use the football club as their little getaway and their little getaway from the problems and their issues. So that's something we've got to be responsible for, in a sense, and we've got to just accept that that's there. And in the COVID world, that's more intensified. So, you know, that's a very long way of saying that, you know, I get it. The club get it. People, not just our club, but I think football gets it, that it's always going to be a wee bit more difficult in these scenarios. But I think the positive that we can hopefully finish on is that hopefully we're coming towards some degree of end to this. And I'm not saying necessarily the next couple of weeks, but, you know, with the vaccine numbers going the way that they are, with the ICU cases and deaths remaining extremely low, I'm really, really hopeful that, you know, we're hopeful, you know, I don't think we're ever going to get rid of COVID-19. I think it's always going to be here in some semblance. But I think as we learn as a nation to live with it, I think we can start to get back to some degree of normality and accept that it's going to be here. And much like influenza and things, we've just got to live with beside it and work with it and try and make sure that the people who are most vulnerable are protected. I think as all that stuff happens and we can get, you know, crowds back in, and we've already made an application to have several thousand at the League Cup game or the Premier Sports Cup games in the summer or next month, sorry, then that's just, again, just going to hopefully add to that, you know, return to normality. And hopefully we return to normality before we return to that little bit of respite between disappointments on the pitch and, you know, the people's outpouring of emotions. But I think what we all should say, and I should finish on this, is football, what makes football great, what makes football amazing, and what makes football different from any other sport in my eyes in the world is the emotion and is how much people care about it. And we should never lose that. We should never, ever lose the fact that people care so much about their club that sometimes it makes them do and say and feel silly things. And we've all been there. We've all been that, had that irrational points. And, you know, but that's what makes football brilliant. And that's what makes Mullow brilliant. But I think, you know, COVID's intensified it. But hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll be back to some degree of normality.
100%. I think that's a great note to end it on. It is our passion. It is something that ignites something inside us, and it's also given us the brilliant opportunity to, I wouldn't know any of you guys on this call, and I wouldn't have known Andy either if it wasn't for Motherwell Football Club. Pepe, I'll give you the closing word on this, but it's special how football kind of breeds these relationships, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it is. It's particularly supporting a club like Mullerow. I always love telling the story about after our recent cup runs, how we went back to the Cooper suite and the players were in mixing with the fans, and I said to my wee boy, maybe the majority of your friends support Rangers or Celtic, but I can guarantee you that nothing happens like this. You'll not be speaking to a player after a final or a semi-final. But I think even the fact that Alan's gave up his time to come on and speak about a fan that not only did he knew but respected, and it really does kind of show the ethos of the club. And hopefully, if any Andy's family listen to it, that they understand and how much he'll be missed. So that's my final say. Thanks, Alan, for coming on.
It's been a pleasure to catch up with you, Alan. I wish it was in better circumstances. I really do. But thank you for taking the time and sharing your memories of someone that wasn't just considered as a fellow supporter. He was also clearly a good friend.
Yeah, I mean, and listen, I started the show by what you know, passing my deepest condolences to our family, and I'll finish that way and just say, Andy, mate, wherever you are, hopefully we'll meet again soon. Rest in peace, buddy.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. Our thoughts and are so firmly with Andy's family at this horrendous time. Until then, take care.